Hi, and welcome to the 49th episode of the Autoblog Podcast. I'm John Neff.
I'm Damon Lawrence.
And I'm Alex Nunez.
And together we are here to talk about the latest happenings in the automotive world, which means this week we're going to talk about the LA Auto Show that occurred last week. Damon and I were both in attendance. Alex, you were kind of watching from afar in front of your computer. But it was, all in all, I would say, a very successful show, I think. A lot of world debuts and a lot of big announcements came out of it. So we're going to get down to talking about it in just a second. But first, we want to give Volvo, the sponsors of the Autoblog podcast, a chance to say a few words.
The Volvo XC70 and XC90 deliver the ideal combination of versatility and comfort. They are both rugged and dependable and come equipped with Volvo's advanced safety features. Visit www.volvocars.us for more information.
All right, we're back, and let's start off with the production vehicles that debuted at the LA Auto Show this year, which, of course, a lot of them debuted well before the show actually took place. I'm thinking specifically of the Buick Enclave that was introduced to the public the day before. Shots of it were released many days before the LA Auto Show, and this is one car in our poll, even though it's, you know, supposed to be a boring crossover utility vehicle, was voted very highly in our poll of the best production vehicles.
Yeah, that came in second place, no less.
Yeah, behind what was first, the Altima Coupe?
The Altima Coupe.
Yeah, probably because it's a drop-dead sexy CUV. I mean, I've seen the CUV shape in pretty much every iteration it can be, and they're starting to all look the same. But the Enclave, I think, is a very classy design. It looks extremely upscale, and it looks like it doesn't share a single body panel with its other Lambda platform-based cousins, the GMC Acadia and the Saturn Outlook.
That's the most important part, because the Acadia and the Outlook obviously look like each other. The differences are far more subtle, whereas the Buick really stands alone.
Yeah, and then we also have the Chrysler Sebring Convertible, which if you didn't like the sedan, which it's been kind of universally panned in the media, and I think a lot of our commenters have ripped on it as well. I think the Chrysler Sebring Convertible actually does a little bit to kind of dress up the design. I almost say that the face looks almost better on a hardtop coupe than it does on a sedan. I don't know if you guys see the same thing.
I like it much better, actually. I think it looks quite good, almost very good, because it's with the two doors and it's longer. You know, you take the roof off, you put the roof down. It is a very nice looking car. And the interior, which I did not like in the Sebring that I drove, looks a lot better in these light colors. I don't know what the deal is now with these new interiors, but in the darker colors.
Yeah, I know what you mean. They kind of tend to look cheap in the darker colors.
Gray looks so cheap, and it does not look very. At least in the photos that I saw, and you saw the car person, so you could tell me better, but at least in the photos that were released, it looks much better with the tan.
Yeah, it makes me wonder whether or not the design was actually made for the convertible first rather than the sedan, because it does seem more at home.
It's much more complete. The sedan is weird looking.
Yeah. Well, I think the sedan, probably from the B-pillar back, it just, that C-pillar is very odd. It doesn't really look like a sedan. It looks kind of like you expect a hatch to be in the back instead of a trunk lid. Moving on, let's go through a couple more. A really big announcement was the Saturn View, which we finally got to see in production trim for the first time.
Which is the Antara,
isn't a bad thing. That's good.
Antara. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
And the inside is very, very similar.
Yeah, I thought the interior was actually a little boring. That kind of, I think, was the weakest point for me. But still, I mean, anything you say about this new view, it's just 200% better than the current view. I mean, if you want to look at an example of old GM versus new GM, look at pretty much every Saturn product that's coming out in the next 4 years. Every new product is new GM. I mean, it's higher quality, better design, probably better reliability, although we haven't been able to judge that yet. And the Saturn View is just another example of an awesome port we get from Europe. You know, literally a direct port of kind of the best thing they have, now we have.
And we get the 3.6, which I don't think any European Antara has, which You know,
yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, which is a great engine, and that's.
I may be wrong, but that 3.6 liter is really good.
Is that going to be in the upper level trim or just the red line trim?
Based on what was in the GM release that you reported on, it's going to be in the XR or whatever the top
okay.
level trim is, and the red line.
Okay,
but the red line is just going to be two wheel drive.
Right.
I think. Don't hold me to that, actually.
Another couple cars that we, Damon and I actually saw the night before at a Nissan.
Sentra.
Yeah, the Sentra SER, which definitely dressed up the Sentra's looks. I'm not a big fan of the new Sentra and its kind of combination of boxiness.
Yeah, it's not a really bad looking car. I mean, the modifications they made, you know, just the side sills and a new front rear. Bumper and that kind of thing were pretty effective. I think it got a little bit lower to the ground. I mean, the suspension's been dropped. I don't remember what the amount was, but an amount that justifies that it actually looks a little bit more clean. But and two trim levels on that. It was the normal SER, and then the Spec B. And the Spec B is going to be putting out 200 horsepower.
And that's 200 naturally aspirated horsepower.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, kind of an interesting tidbit: the guy that developed the engine that we love from Nissan, that 3.5 liter VQ V6, is the same guy that developed this engine. So, good things to come from this. And,
yeah, that
and
bodes
actual
well.
Usable torque too, compared to like the Civic Si and that kind of thing. So,
yeah,
that was pretty excited about.
You know, it's funny because, you know, you think about how much we love the 3.5 liter V6. There was a time when the original Sentra SER was out where they ruled the roost with awesome four cylinders. I mean, that what was it, a 1.8 liter four cylinder and that?
Yeah, the 1.8 liter in the first gen, the 91 to 94 or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, and that is that's a sought after car. I mean, you can't find that car.
Oh, no, you can't. No, I've sought out them before and you can't find them, unfortunately.
So literally, Nissan has had one of the best engines in both four cylinders and V6s for a long time. Probably since that original Sentra SER, they haven't really made a splash.
Was up until they canceled it recently. So
yeah,
you know, they've always been a very, very strong power plant company. There's no doubt about that.
Well, speaking of the 3.5 liter, it will also be found in the Nissan Altima Coupe, which they debuted at this media event a day before the show. And this is a hot car, and I don't even think it's supposed to be. I mean, it's not the G35 Coupe. It's not, you know, the 350Z. When I did the post, I called it the poor man's G35 because it definitely has the C pillar of the G35 that's instantly recognizable. It has a drop dead sexy shoulder line that goes right onto the trunk.
The rear end kind of has some 350Z influence too. I think if you and I pointed that out.
Yeah.
It kind of bends up a little bit, tapers down, so it's kind of got that hunchback look to it. That's actually really, really kind of endearing on it.
It just has a very good. I mean, in terms of its surface, it has a very good mix of kind of like concave curves and then flat sheet metal. Just a really good design. I mean, I would say better than the Honda Accord Coupe.
Better
than the Solera Coupe, you know. I mean, basically the best looking front wheel drive, kind of long wheel based.
Solera in the same sentence as this.
I don't know how Toyota can even sell the Solera. I think it's made by a different company and not Toyota at all, because that is by far, I think that is by far the worst product Toyota makes. But this Altima Coupe, the fact that you can get it with the 3.5 liter, I think it's going to start in the very low 20s. Which again is awesome if you can score that 3.5 liter in a vehicle that's going to be this cheap. I think that's
I would expect the 3.5 liter not to be available for under 25 grand. I think if you top this out, it's going to be up around 26, 27.
Yeah, you think
28 grand.
Yeah. And that seems pretty reasonable. I have
a
friend
who's. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. Not at all.
Yeah. I have a friend who's driving a 240SX that really needs to be set on fire.
I don't know.
I told him about this, and he's already, you know, making inquiries because, you know.
It's not rear-wheel drive.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to like
not,
it.
No, well, he could care less about that.
Okay.
You know, he's like,
that was my only complaint about the Altima Coupe was I was really waiting for the spiritual successor to the 240, just a cheap, lightweight, fun front-engine rear-wheel drive car that came out, and unfortunately they're not doing it. And it's understandable. I understand why they're not doing it, but I would have loved to see this putting power down to the rear wheels.
Just to keep things rolling, let's move on to one of the very few cars that Ford showed off, the Ford Escape and the Ford Escape Hybrid, which I actually like the redesign of the Escape. I think of this and the Mariner and the upcoming Tribute, which we've already seen kind of a sneak peek shots of. I think it looks very good. I think it looks like what Ford should have done with the Explorer, which was to shrink it down, not balloon it up. And I think the Escape might actually see an uptick in sales because of this design.
It's a lot more butch looking. Although yeah. I did like the previous Escape also. I think that the previous Escape is a good looking little truck also.
But this
is definitely better looking than the Explorer redo, which
is
evolutionary, you know.
Well, the Explorer got chrome everywhere. It got that big single frame kind of grille that the Audis have, but it's just not like done that as well. And it just got huge. I mean, it just became a giant vehicle.
No, the Explorer was always huge, though. I mean,
it really was. No, back in the day, the original Explorer and the second generation were about the size of this Escape.
Yeah.
And then when we got the rollover happened, then they wanted to make sure these things were never going to flip over. So they widened the track as much as possible, and it just got big from there, big and heavy. So, like I said, I think I've railed against Ford for having, you know, too many SUVs and too many products in the same category. But, you know, if they're all good products, there's a chance they could all, you know, have an uptick in sales. But
Escape. But, you know, my dad drives an Escape. He'll look at this when his lease is up. Or he's ready to get rid of his. Actually, he owns his. But he's definitely going to look at this. So
I think there are plenty of people who know the difference between kind of a more hardcore SUV and a soft roading CUV. I would put the Escape closer to more of a hardcore SUV, although it's a baby ute, so it's not going to do a lot. But more so than... give me an example. Like
The View.
The View. That's a very good example. I think people know the difference of that, and this could stand out because of it. Look at the Escape, though, and think, what would a new Ranger look like if they could just lop off everything after the B-pillar and put a bed back there?
It would look pretty good.
I wish they'd do it finally, but I don't think that's in the card for a while.
Speaking of looking pretty good, what'd you guys think about the TT Roadster?
It's always hard with a Roadster debut because to me, as soon as they debut a coupe, you know what the Roadster looks like. So it wasn't too exciting for me. It was sexy. I mean,
like the new TT, so I like the convertible.
Yeah, basically that's what you can say. Let's see, what other production vehicles am I missing?
Callaway is awesome.
You're talking about the Callaway C16, which is a version, or I should say it's built on the Corvette C6 platform. For all the world, looks like a last-generation Camaro, but it has a monster motor based on, what's it based on, the 6.2 liter?
The LS2, yeah.
Yeah, the LS2 that makes an ungodly amount of horsepower.
616 horsepower, 582 foot-pounds.
Yeah, 0 to 60
in 3.3.
It has to be a very unsafe 3.3 seconds in that thing. And it looks like it's going to cost around like $120,000. This was kind of a little surprise at the show. It just popped up in a display before Callaway even had their press conference. And I was I didn't get to see it in person, but I know I think maybe Frank went down to shoot it for us. Bright orange paint job, very loud.
Carbon fiber wheels,
lots of carbon fiber parts actually, and it pretty much looks it looks like a Callaway. I remember reading about Callaways in Motor Trend in like 1991.
I was wondering what Callaway was up to because it's been a while since they've introduce something new, and so this was actually I was very happy to see this because Callaway Cars has made some pretty awesome stuff in the past.
Yeah, they have definitely. Last production vehicle we'll talk about. There were a few more. There were a couple Porsches. The 911 GT3, which is awesome, gorgeous and violently powerful car. The 911 Targa 4 and Targa 4S. I think it's the first time they've had what is it?
They're offering two new. They normally just offered one engine in the Targa. Now they're offering both the 3.6 liter and the 3.8 liter. Or, yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Kind of minor news, but it happened. The Lotus Sport Cup Exige and the Lotus Exige S. Again, I didn't see these. Did you go down and see this, Damon?
That was me that shot them. And I've gotten in and out of the Elise before, which is pretty easy because, of course, there's no roof on there unless you got it set. But I hadn't gotten in and out of one of the hardtop versions, the Exiges, and there is no possible graceful way of getting out of those things. Like, I can't.
You don't want to be Britney Spears getting out of the
No.
We all know the effect of that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. But they're both just really, really the most svelte vehicles I saw there. And, by the way, when I was shooting these, I was right behind Arnold Schwarzenegger as he was checking out the spikers, so that was kind of a little interesting.
We should talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger. He was in attendance. He actually gave a press conference that was lightly attended by the media, I would say. And of course, it was about green vehicles. He did it outside the show, in front of I think five different kinds of alternative fuel vehicles: the Tesla Roadster, the Mercedes-Benz, the Honda FCX, the Mercedes-Benz BlueTEC E-Class, and I think a couple others. And we attended it because earlier, the first day of the LA Auto Show, Rick Wagner gave a press conference as well, which, Damon, you attended, so why don't you tell everybody what happened, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, it was pretty entertaining. I mean, it was your typical press conference, nothing too entertaining there. He did make an announcement, though, which was the they were starting to develop a plug-in hybrid for the Saturn View. They didn't specify a date as to when it would be completed. He didn't really go into a lot of detail about what was going on, but the LA Auto Show kind of had this central green focus to it. And right at the very end of the conference, or at end of the speech, two gentlemen in their 20s got up onto stage, and one of them unravels this really, really large piece of poster paper that's got printed something to the effect of, "I blank, CEO of General Motors, will make a pledge to make General Motors the most fuel-efficient auto company in the world by 2010. And the gentleman that had kind of ransacked the mic while kind of pushed Wagner aside, you know, said, "Will you sign this?" And Wagner just said, I think my comments speak for themselves. And they were kind of, you know, quickly ushered off the stage, and that was about it. And, you know, it was – it kind of – really wasn't necessary, I guess. I mean, I'm all for some civil disobedience every now and then, but after Wagner gets done, you know, saying, "Hey, these are the steps we're going to make to start making GM more fuel efficient," and these guys run up on stage and do this.
He announced a plug-in hybrid, for Christ's sake. I mean
exactly. This is pretty big news.
Yeah.
The plug-in hybrid is like the holy grail for all these activist types. He announces it, and then these two they still go through it. I mean, it is so, just to editorialize for a minute, it is so ridiculous, and these activists who pull these stunts like this do more to undermine the causes that they supposedly care so much about by pulling these stunts and looking like a bunch of – it makes it look like amateur hour. And
honestly, what they were asking of GM to become the most fuel-efficient manufacturer, that's not even asking a lot. I mean, right now I think it's – who is it? I think it's Toyota or – it's Toyota or Honda, and it wouldn't – I mean, GM will probably be the most fuel-efficient car company in, like, 4 years if they come out with the 12 hybrids they've promised. Yeah. So it's like, really, is that what you want to ask him? I mean, they're probably going to do that anyway. They want to do that. What point are you – I mean
– like I said, it's a dumb stunt, and, you know, they look bad. They look bad.
Yeah, they did. They staged another protest outside where they – washed a Hummer H2 in green water while they were all in bikinis and board shorts, but it wasn't very pretty.
It looked really highly attended.
Yeah.
But I was really curious about what they were using in the green water that was going to be, you know, okay to be washed down the sewer drains. But anyway.
Right, exactly. The sewer drains that were going right towards the ocean since we were in L.A. Let's talk about this plug-in hybrid, though, because I think this was really big news, and I think a lot of people missed it, and I'm not sure why. One reason it's big news is because when the Saturn View Green Line comes out, the next version, the at first, it's going to be the same kind of hybrid as the current Saturn VUE Green Line, which is to say a mild hybrid based on a really powerful starter alternator. The hybrid motor is going to, correct me if I'm wrong, it's going to provide a little bit of boost to the engine when it's needed during acceleration, but it won't be able to drive on the battery power alone.
That is correct.
Okay.
Right.
So soon after that, they're going to introduce the first iteration of GM's two-mode hybrid system in a front-wheel drive application for the Saturn VUE Green Line, which I think is really, really big news. I mean, this is going to be kind of GM's first really mainstream vehicle with this two-mode system that mm-hmm. works to increase gas mileage both while accelerating and stop-and-go driving and also on the highway with cylinder deactivation and all that jazz. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really big news. And the plug-in hybrid is going to be based on this two-mode system. So you're basically going from the current Green Line, which will give you about 20 to 25% greater fuel economy. Then we move to this new two-mode system, which is going to give you 45% greater fuel economy. And then we're going to jump to this plug-in hybrid, which is going to go through the roof because it's going to have the two-mode setup and the ability probably to run on pure electricity anywhere up to like 40 miles per hour. That's going to be a huge vehicle. I mean,
yeah. I mean, listen, for people who commute and are in congested areas, like my commute sucks, a plug-in hybrid, you know, you're not exceeding 20 miles an hour for
right,
a lot.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And quite honestly, I mean, you drop this in a sedan, like the Aura Green Line, and you're done. I mean, game over, Toyota, if you don't have a plug-in hybrid out by then. And I think Toyota kind of is in danger of resting on the Prius a bit too much. If all they have in the pipeline is a next-generation Prius, and they don't have
more than that.
I mean, if they don't have a plug-in hybrid, if they don't have diesels, if they don't have the whole gamut, I mean, you gotta be like Honda in this situation, where Honda, okay, it has very good presence in the hybrid area. It doesn't have its own Prius, but you know, it's got offerings.
And I see a lot of Civic hybrids in my daily travels.
Yeah, exactly. And then you look at the domestics like GM and Ford, and they're playing catch up, but now they are really serious now. I mean, they're not going to let Toyota become just the green manufacturer. You know, maybe Toyota gets the hybrid crown, that's fine, but they're going to hit them from every other side they can think of. And cars like this, the Saturn VUE Green Line plug-in, they need to get this out within 2 years.
Yeah, they really do, because it's a very practical package, and if you offer that kind of fuel economy and that kind of package, you're going to have a smash.
Yeah. Do you think it would come in under $30,000?
That's a tough question.
I hadn't even thought about the price, really, but I hope it does. I think that's the price point. I don't think you want to go over $30,000, because this isn't a luxury vehicle at all.
Yeah, I agree with you. And they could still who knows? Like, we don't know what Toyota's going to come with, so it's unfair to speculate, you know, if they'd be able to undercut Toyota. But, I mean, currently, I mean, I remember looking up I don't remember the number, but the Highlander Hybrid, for example, mm-hmm. that is not an inexpensive car.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, not at all.
Nor does it offer an extremely high fuel economy numbers. I mean, it did very good ones, but... you know, this plug-in, I mean, really, don't we have to say that measuring the fuel economy of a plug-in hybrid is going to be very difficult? I mean, I'd like to see how these things show up on the EPA's old and new test cycle that they're going to use.
Oh, you know what? The test cycles are going to have – I don't know that the test cycles are going to be able to accurately gauge it. It's going to be more anecdotal once people see how far they go on a tank of gas and
right.
do the math.
Because it's going to vary so extreme between each person, between people who do a lot of city driving, people who do a lot of highway driving. Yeah. But like I said, with this two-mode setup, it's going to be way better than normal either way, whether you're doing highway or city. Because highway is usually where a lot of the modern hybrids kind of, I don't want to say fail, but don't kind of show up to play. And I'm pointing to hybrids probably like, you know, the Honda Accord hybrid, which is based on a V6, which is, you know, it's going to be a V6 on the highway, you know, just like all are.
Well, even the Escape hybrid, you know.
Yeah.
That doesn't do as well, you know, highway-wise.
All right, let's move on, because we've spent a lot of time on the production vehicles. So let's run through the concept vehicles real quick, too. the Jujaro Mustang was obviously a big deal. That was debuted the night before as well, and pictures came out a little earlier. And quite honestly, the Jujaro Mustang, it's not growing on me over time. The more I look at it, the more I don't like it. The shock of it when I first saw it was tremendous, and I was like, wow. And there are certainly angles I like it from, but overall, I don't think Jujaro kind of captured a pony car. I think they took the name Mustang a little too literally and infused it.
Well, the interior is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, they actually have horse eyes.
It's, come on. They lost me on the interior. Outside, I don't think it's bad. I mean, obviously, it has this stupid Lambo doors because it's a concept
right.
car. And you have to have Lambo doors on your concept cars now so that people like us can write that sentence. Obviously, if it makes the production, it won't have these.
Right. Well, actually, they do it. I've been told this before. Every weird door design you see in a concept is only there to make it easy for photographers to shoot the interior of the vehicle at a distance.
That's
because you just can't do that with normal production doors. So they put these weird flip-up doors and all that so you can get a good shot.
And whatnot.
But yeah, I don't know. The front end looks way too heavy. I mean, to me, it looks like the front end from the end of the hood, base of the windshield forward. It looks like a completely separate part of the car that was just connected to the greenhouse and everything from the A-pillar back. I don't know. I just it hasn't grown on me over time. I'll just leave my comments at that.
I was bored with it about 10 minutes after seeing it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there was nothing that I thought was really revolutionary. I'm gonna you know parrot all of our commenters and Alex and pretty much everybody else by saying the interior was totally ridiculous. There were better concepts there, and I think the Mazda Nagari concept was the one that kind of gained the majority of my affection. You saw that one in person, right?
I did. That was the one press conference I actually attended because I spent most of my time in the media center, and I'm really glad I did because. It was.
You got cool swag. That's why.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the press kit for it had literally a vase in it, like a flower vase, and it was because the design theme, the design language for the Nagare is flow, and if you look at it, you can see the paint job actually has these kind of stripes that
striations. You know.
Yeah, that kind of mimic the flow of water or the flow of wind, and you know this is a pie in the sky concept, the Nagare. You know, you're not going to see a production version of this. And basically, they're introducing, you know, Mazda's new design language with it. But I really like what Mazda has done in the past, last year specifically, with their concepts and what they're doing with the Nagare and the next two concepts. Because they've basically said, you know, for the 2007 auto show season, we're going to introduce three concepts. Each one is going to be closer to production than the last. So this first one is, you know, not production intent at all. The second one that they're going to introduce at the Detroit show, they say could be produced within 10 years. And then the third one, which I forget which show that's going to be at, it might be Geneva or it might be Tokyo, I'm not sure. The third one, anyway, is going to be literally probably within two to three years out of production. So that's going to be a production vehicle. So that really anchors this pie-in-the-sky concept for me. Because usually I see a pie-in-the-sky concept that's never going to make it to a showroom. And I say, you know, big deal. It's so ridiculous that I don't care.
Mazda's stuff, I mean, starting with the Kabura concept, that wasn't that pie-in-the-sky. I mean, that was basically just a hardtop MX-5 with a pretty crazy exterior that wouldn't take much to tone down. And I got the same thing from the Nagare was, I mean, it's a really radical styling exercise. There's no doubt about that. But there's so much that can be done with that to actually make it plausible for production.
And basically you're seeing this kind of maybe new corporate face with the pointed tip, the raised fenders, right. and the headlights on those fenders.
The new kind of gaping maw that's on the Kabura, that's on the Nagare,
right.
We're going to start seeing more of that. It's not going to peter out. But no, like I said, I think Mazda's concepts are some of the best looking ones, and I got to hand it to Franz. He knows what he's doing. On the opposite end of that was the Acura Advance sedan.
Oh, God.
You know,
when that was unveiled, it was just quiet for a couple seconds, and then I watched people look at each other. And including, I was actually sitting right in front of Chubba Chetta, and I looked behind, and he looked at me and kind of raised his eyebrows, and that was about the extent of our conversation about it.
You know, if people give Chrysler a pass for the Imperial sedan, then I think Acura needs a pass for the advanced sedan. I don't think... It's garish. It's completely un-Acura, like, in its kind of its thoughtlessness towards aerodynamics. But I don't think it was, I don't know, I don't think it was so horrible. Quite honestly, it looks like a vehicle that could be used in a movie, like a futuristic Batman movie or something.
Oh, and totally.
You know, I mean, it's a concept, you know.
It's all well and good, but this thing looks like it was modeled after the Navy's new literal combat ship that they're developing. Google, and you look at what the literal combat ship looks like and compare it to this Acura.
And there's,
you know, come on,
a lot of similarities. Well, no, that was the thing that I think I wrote up in the original post, was there's so many nautical themes coming out of this. Because you look at, like, the back end, it's got this kind of pulled out kind of boat tail, and the front end's got these lips that are coming up. And yeah, it was just, their basis for it was basically, you know, we want to imagine what, you know, the CEO of a Fortune 500 company is going to be driving 20 years down the road.
And probably not an Acura, for one thing. But
I'm pretty sure it's not going to be an Acura in this setup. But
I don't know if you guys saw it, but on Carscoop.com, the guy noticed, I forget his name, he noticed that the advanced sedan looks very similar to the Cadillac 16 concept. And he found press shots of both that are literally exactly the same angle. And if you look at them in these three angles, it's like a three-quarter front, a profile, and a three-quarter rear. It's uncanny how much they are, how similar they are in like specifically the profile. I should do a post on it and put those up for our readers to see. Let's move on real quick, because the next vehicle isn't so much a concept vehicle as it is a production one in disguise, the Volkswagen Tiguan, which is their new small CUV. Which, you know, new Volkswagen vehicles all look the same to me. I mean, they really are just, you know, kind of massaging the Volkswagen face at this point. But I think it looks pretty good, and it had a diesel in it, which is going to be produced for the U.S., which I like a lot.
I like the Tiguan a lot. That has the look of something that will sell, I think, with not a whole lot of trouble.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it'll probably have that Volkswagen premium, but at the same time, they don't have trouble selling Golfs or GTIs or Jettas or Passats because of that, and I don't think they'll have a problem selling this either.
No, this looks like a little Touareg. That's not a bad thing, and, you know, that diesel is going to be very fuel efficient, most likely, and... there's not a whole lot not to like. I think that's one of the better looking. I mean, calling it a concept is such, you know, come on. I mean,
it's not a concept.
There's concepts. It's so ridiculous to do so, but, you know, because it has, you know, oh, okay, we have to call it a concept because it has hand-cut tires.
We want to talk about the Honda concept vehicles as well. They had two, one of which was the Remix, which was a two-door hatchback, which made everyone think of a CRX successor. But I think Honda probably doesn't have that intent at all. I think it was more of a concept styling exercise. This could be produced in the next, you know, 7 years or something like that. But it was a snazzy looking vehicle. It didn't have a look of any current production Honda,
which I kind of
like, because I'm not liking the path that Honda's been going down. Not a huge fan of the Civic, either interior or exterior. And it just seems like a lot of their vehicles, the CRV, I'm just not willing to follow them down that design path. But I liked the Remix. I thought that had a lot of potential.
Yeah, I wasn't particularly fond of, I don't know, I might not have the disdain you have for Honda's current design elements, interior and exterior. I wasn't a big fan of the front end. It seemed just kind of very, very dull, not very imaginative, but I liked everything from, like, the A-pillar back. I liked the sweeping line coming up, and I really liked the rear hatch, but then again, I was also a huge fan of the CRX when it came out, and still am, so anything with the hatchback, I'm always a little bit...
And it kind of reminds, doesn't it kind of remind you of the Volvo C30?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
But the coolest feature of all of it, the exhaust outlets that kind of came up out from under and then shoot down. It was, I'm not sure if you guys saw that, but it's,
I don't know if I saw that.
Favorite design elements in there, because it's pretty rare that you see, you know, there's so much standard stuff. The wheels are always going to be circular, and the exhaust outlets are always going to be in the same place. But this one exhaust outlet, like I said, it comes up right in the middle, and it's kind of a neat little feature. But anyway,
is it out of the rear? I'm looking for it right now.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and then they instead of coming like and pointing out straight back, they each point out at an angle.
Exactly. Well, it actually kind of comes up and kind of hugs the undercarriage, and then they kind of shoot down from there. It's just our readers need to take a look at it.
That's cool.
Way to describe it. Yeah. But like I said, and then what was the other concept that came out from Honda?
The step bus.
Yeah. Step bus. Which, you know, being a fan of K cars in Japan, Alex, you should like this one. I don't think it meets any K car specification, but it's just a really small, really upright box on wheels.
It has complete K car flavor.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, I don't think it meets any of the specs either, but it's a total, you know, it's thematically very similar.
And quite honestly, if the Scion XB can make it in the U.S., the Step Bus surely can. I mean, I actually like this design. I think it's a cool-looking design. It's a lot of utility.
Sliding doors make sense. Peugeot does the sliding door thing on the 1007 already, which is one of their city cars. You know, I guess it makes more sense in Europe where the parking is just utterly ridiculous. But this is a cool idea. I like this stuff.
You know, every day our major metropolitan areas are becoming more and more like Europe. So I think vehicles like this, vehicles like the smart car, they're making more sense. And I think over time, over the next 20 years, I think most automakers are going to be able to make a business case for selling a car almost strictly to major metropolitan markets in the U.S.
Yep.
Just because people want a car so bad, but it doesn't make sense to buy a big one.
That car offers, but they don't need the size of, you know, the kind of car that you have if you're a suburban commuter. You know?
Exactly. So let's talk about the L.A. Auto Show as a whole, because I was really interested in this show. As most people know, this is the second L.A. Auto Show that's happened in 2006. The first one was very early January, the same time the Detroit Auto Show was happening. And the reason they held a second one is because they're moving it to November so that it doesn't conflict with Detroit and kind of has time to itself to bask in the sunlight of the media. And for the most part, I think this show succeeded in doing that. I mean, it really broke out from under the shadow of the Detroit show. And the first day was incredible. I mean, GM really took advantage of the show and had a lot to show off.
It's because GM has so much product. They can spread stuff around all show season this year.
Right. I mean, I think it's gonna be an awesome show season for GM. And they got started quickly at the LA show. I can't wait for Detroit and what they show. I was disappointed in Ford only showing basically two vehicles, the Escape and the Jujaro Mustang.
In Ford's defense, I think that with that Jujaro Mustang, they really grabbed a ton of attention, you know, based on the feedback that we had from commenters and stuff. So,
they did.
They really needed
to do a lot, but what they did certainly garnered its fair share of attention. And, you know, it probably took some of the edge off of GM's big reveals because, as we stated earlier in the podcast, I mean, people aren't even really talking about the plug-in hybrid. So,
yeah, they just want to talk about a Mustang that's, you know, that might show design cues of the next one. I mean, that really doesn't have any practical application at all, rather than the actual availability of a plug-in hybrid. But
right, yeah, like I said, you know, Ford has one of the things they can always fall back on is the Mustang. They can show a Mustang, and it's going to suck the oxygen out of the room. So
the first day I think was very good. I know, Damon, you were running around like a chicken with your head cut off, trying to cover everything, and I was up in the media room. And we had Frank out and a couple other people. The second day, we were twiddling our thumbs. I mean, there was nothing going on the second day. Toyota, for instance, did not even have a press conference at the LA Auto Show. They had a display, of course, but they basically said, we don't have anything to say. You know, and when a company can do that at your auto show, then your auto show is not that big. I mean, if they can choose to skip it. I mean, you can't skip the Detroit Auto Show. You can't skip Paris or Frankfurt. But apparently you can still skip LA.
Or maybe that was Toyota's fatal flaw this time around. I don't know.
I'm actually shocked that Toyota I'm sorry, there. I didn't mean to step on you there. But I'm shocked that they didn't even have a press conference, considering how green oriented the show was. When you think about the fact that Toyota really, you know, has a lot riding on the fact they offer, multiple hybrids at both Lexus and Toyota, and that they have nothing to say at all. It's a little surprising.
That's a very good point. I would have thought they would have had a press conference just to say, look at our sales for the year. We're kicking ass, you know. I mean, we're right on the heels of GM. I mean, basically, half of these press conferences, that's what they are. They're just bragging about their sales anyway. So you would think that Toyota would take the opportunity to say, look at us. We're, you know, we're up 20% every single month. You know, when are we going to
the automakers stop? Don't say negative things at the auto shows?
I noticed it the first time. I'm sitting there, and I'm like, and basically what it comes down to is you wait for them to go through all this crap, and then they unveil it, and then, you know, there's that mad rush to get up to the stage.
Yeah. I was extremely impressed with the show the first day. And thought to myself, the second day, this is the same old LA where nobody cares what's going on. I mean, the companies that showed stuff the second day, the big news was, you know, price announcements for cars that we've seen for, you know, the last year.
Right. So
in that respect, I think LA has a long way to go to come close to Detroit. As a matter of fact, I don't think it is even at a Chicago or a New York yet. But it's, I think it has a much, much better base to build on than it did before. I remember last year's LA show when it was happening right up against the Detroit show, and I mean, really nothing of significance came out. I think the biggest news was the Volkswagen GX3, the three-wheeler.
Yeah,
you know,
that went well.
Yeah, we all know how that ended up. But it kicked off the show season, which I'm very excited about. Next show is the Detroit show, and we have unprecedented coverage set up and that we're getting ready for you. I think we're bringing 8 people to the Detroit show, which for Autoblog is a record by like 2 times as many people we've ever brought to a show. So
I'm actually going to Detroit also. I'm looking very forward to this one.
Yeah, this is going to be your first Detroit, isn't it?
Yes, this will be my first.
It's going to be fun. I guarantee it. Let's go to the last piece of news we had. This is getting pretty long, so let's not spend tons of time on it. But Damon, why don't you bring this one up, because I think
we posted
on it today.
About a month ago, there was some talk that Lexus was going to be introducing some kind of performance division. And originally, and actually I think Alex, you wrote up the original post on this, was about they had an L-tuned theme going on back in the, what was it, late 90s or so?
That is correct.
And basically it was mainly just, you know, aero enhancements and cosmetic stuff. And that.
And they did exhaust and stuff too. I'm in Greenwich. I've seen some L-tuned GSs, and they sound pretty good.
Really?
But yeah, like you said, primarily cosmetic, you know, with light performance enhancements.
Well, they've decided to drop the L, and now they're coming out with, it's going to be just the F series, or, well, I don't want to use F series because that's probably patented by Ford, but basically any vehicle, like there's the AMG for Mercedes and there's the M division for BMW for their kind of motorsports, you know, hotted up versions of their vehicles, and Lexus is going to have their F branding or division or whatever, and they're going to be doing an IS version of the F, which we originally thought was going to be the IS500. We knew it was going to get the 5-liter V8 that was a detuned version of what was in the LS600. But it's now actually going to be called the ISF, most likely. Now, the source for this was Automotive News, which is all well and good. They normally supply pretty good information, normally. But really all they based this off of wasn't a confirmation from Lexus or anything, but Lexus had filed for a, I guess it'd be a patent for the F logo, and then they filed for a trademark for the ISF for the new Lexus. And I guess there's going to be 3 vehicles that Lexus is planning: the ISF, which will be their 4-door sedan, and then they're going to be doing a IS coupe, which we've heard rumors about that for, God, it's got to be almost a year now. And then also, I believe it was going to be an F version of the GS sedan as well. All of which, I mean, I'm sure they'll sell. I guess, I don't know, Mercedes and BMW have a certain cachet with their motorsports division. I'm not sure if Lexus really has that cachet. They're still a division of Toyota, and they're still making appliances, and that's really about it. Appliances for wealthy people, mind you. But I don't know. Have you guys driven the new IS yet? Because I have been driven
in
the passenger seat and wasn't particularly impressed with its sporting credentials.
Yeah, my brother-in-law has an IS 250 all-wheel drive, which okay. I've driven, and I like it. I like it a lot. I think it's a fun. It's a pretty fun car to drive. Very nice to sit in and ride in. But
I think Lexus obviously has the luxury thing down, but it's always struggled with any type of performance passion, and really kind of a cohesive driving experience where you marry the two, which I think, you know, that's what BMW has made its name on, is marrying luxury with performance and having no compromises. Lexus hasn't figured out to do that because they don't want to give an inch on luxury. They don't want decibels in the cabin to go up one. They don't want the ride to get one iota harsher. And you look at something like the LS series, and that thing is a rolling cocoon. And no matter how much power they put in it, no matter what they do, they're never going to get it to perform as well as its counterpart from BMW or Mercedes. And with this F badge, I mean. For Automotive News to do an article on it, I think is all fine and good, but you know, we should be certain that filing for trademarks and whatnot means absolutely nothing. I mean, these companies file for those day after day just to make sure that nobody grabs their ideas, and that's all they are, ideas.
Right.
Now, this one has a little bit more legs to it because it has a logo, and there's a couple of them. But you know, okay, so what is an F-class car going to be? For Lexus, is it going to not only have the giant engine but have all of this other tuning? Are they going to tune it on the Nürburgring with a famous race car driver? I mean, are they going to do the kind of things you got to do to go up against a BMW, M3 or an M5? You know, I just don't see Lexus ever being able to kind of crack out of its persona of being a pure luxury car maker. And quite honestly, you can make a lot of money making the best luxury cars in the world.
Bentley seems to do just fine. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, how much money does BMW actually make on the M Series? I think it's more of an image thing than anything else. But right now, Lexus has the image of being the best luxury car out of, you know, the Germans. I mean, they've out pampered the Germans, which is a huge feat in itself.
I think the way you could sum it up is this: Lexus wants to compete with the Germans, but they don't want, like you said, they don't want to give on the luxury. So. They want to be like BMW and Mercedes, but they won't budge from the like Bentley type place where they are right now. You have to move away from that a little bit to really compete with BMW and Mercedes-Benz.
Well, and my point is they shouldn't move away from that. They should corner the I'm going to be a luxury car, and they should try and move the talk away from being just an appliance to being the ultimate luxury car, the pamperer. The technology leader, which I think they do, but then they get confused when they, you know, bring out a car with a monster engine and they say, this is our BMW fighter. No, it's not, because we all know that you've put way too much insulation in it and that the steering is going to be not as communicative and all of that stuff.
Think back, John, you were at the New York show.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, at the press conference where they introduced the LS600H, I mean, part of the big sell was the only sound you're going to hear, like, light electronic mechanical sounds coming from the inside, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like you said, that whole theme of isolation, I mean, that's what they want to do, so, you know, do that.
Yeah, do that. You know, of course, I'm always up for a performance version of vehicles, and if they did come out with this performance arm, this F series or F class, whatever you want to call it, you know, awesome. I'm all for it. But I just don't think that it's going to help them in their fight to increase their sales in the face of BMW and Mercedes. I just don't think that's the image they really want to go after. That's a dogfight they can't win.
No, I would rather, listen, if Toyota wants to do a performance car, could you please make me a new Supra and stop, you know, messing around and trying to make performance Lexuses? You know, make some, come on, you've got...
Seriously, I mean, they need a new Supra to meet the Skyline head-on.
Yeah, they really do.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be, that's going to be a big deal.
Yeah. Okay, well, we have talked your ear off for long enough, so we're going to wrap this up. Before we do, though, we do want to give Volvo another opportunity to say a few words.
The Volvo XC70 and XC90 deliver the ideal combination of versatility and comfort. They are both rugged and dependable, and come equipped with Volvo's advanced safety features. Visit www.volvocars.us for more information.
Okay, and before we go, I do want to mention this is the last podcast before we relaunch the Autoblog podcast in the 50th episode. So if there's anything you don't like about the show, the sound quality, the fact that it's made on my personal computer very quickly, that's all going to be fixed with the next podcast when we relaunch it with the 50th episode, which should be coming in the next week or so. We're going to blow it out and have promotional giveaways. Please be sure, if you're already a listener to the podcast, we thank you very much, and hopefully you'll be around to catch one of the promotional items we're going to give away. And hopefully we'll attract a lot more listeners, because that's what we want to do. We have a very loyal audience right now that's not huge, but you guys definitely listen every week, and we appreciate it. So hopefully
And we love you.
Yes, we do very much. And hopefully we can add some brothers and sisters to that group when we relaunch on the 50th episode. Other than that, we want to remind everybody to visit autoblog.com every day. We have posts going up very often and all day long. So if you're at work and you're bored, hit up autoblog.com. And you can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes by doing a search for Autoblog. We should pop right up, and you can add it to your podcast feeds. And aside from that, I think we're done for the week. And the next time we will see you will be on our new podcast. So everyone, have a great week.
Take care.
Bye, guys.